welcome to Unjustly Maligned, the show for people who go against the grain. We seek to rehabilitate overlooked, ignored, derided, and just plain hated contributions to pop culture. Novels, movies, music, comic books, video games, one-act plays, whatever. If everyone hates it, we'll find someone who loves it and let them explain why you should too. This is episode 6, and you can find the show notes at ump.fm. I'm your host, Anthony Johnston, and my guest today is a woman whose career includes being an actress, singer, and TV presenter before she burst onto the comic scene in the mid-2000s with the manga Shakespeare adaptations of Hamlet and Much Ado About Nothing. Since then, she's written and drawn a variety of series, including work for the DFC, My Little Pony, Oni Press, and Marvel Comics. But she's best known as the artist of the New York Times best-selling Vampire Academy graphic novels, and her new webcomic series Breaks, with Swedish author Malin Ryden. So I'm delighted she's taken time out of her rather hectic schedule to talk to me today. She is, of course, Ms. Emma Vicelli. Emma, welcome to the show.
Oh, blush, blush. That was very nice.
You've chosen a very interesting work or body of work to talk about today.
I like your use of the word interesting.
Yeah. So why don't you tell us what you've chosen, why you've chosen it, and why you feel it's, well, in this case, it's more kind of uncool than anything, isn't it? So just tell us a bit about it.
It's pretty uncool. It might be something not that many people listening have actually been exposed to. And so in a sort of anti-Room 101 scenario, I intend to expose more people to the thing that I am talking about, which is fairly broad. And basically, it's Italian cartoon theme tunes. I mean, I would say all cartoon theme tunes, but I think Italian cartoon theme tunes, going by reactions of my friends and loved ones, are particularly abrasive to the non-trained ear.
Why do you think that is?
I think mainly because they're not that good. but I love them dearly. And they're so cheesy and wonderful and evocative to anyone who's kind of grown up with, I mean, like any cartoon theme, we hear them and we're taken back to a time. And I would always argue that the theme tune to Mask is perhaps one of the best theme tunes or best songs ever written. I think it's great. But Italian theme tunes obviously do that for me. And I think a lot of them genuinely are just really good Eurobeat and Europop, but they do whip a bit of cheese.
They really are quite cheesy. And talking about people not being exposed to it, this is a whole new world to me. I mean, obviously, I grew up watching cartoons. I'm familiar with some of the cartoons that you sent me as examples, but I certainly never heard the Italian versions of the theme songs. And I think I also didn't quite realize that theme songs were so often re-recorded in native languages.
Oh, this is like a whole new world, literally a whole new world for you. Now that you've started, and hopefully anyone listening will be the same, they'll be like, oh, what's the German theme of that like? There are some cartoons that will have the same tune. It's such a like enduring theme. It will be the same across nations. So, for instance, if you go back to things like 80 Days Around the World, the Willy Fogg cartoon that we had over here, we actually have exactly the same theme tune, like the same tune that you had in the rest of Europe. It's just our lyrics were changed. Mm-hmm. So sometimes themes would continue and the tune would be the same, but then others just got rewritten by every nation, and often rewritten like 3 or 4 times as well. One of the things that makes Italian theme tunes stand out for me, which is what, you know, I've kind of introduced you to now as well, so is the fact that there's almost one voice. I mean, there's a few more now, but there's a singer called Cristina Davina who basically was the voice of Italian cartoons for as long as I can remember. I would go over there in the summer, I'd spend my days not at the beach but in front of the TV instead watching cartoons, because in Italy cartoons were on all the time, and some of them were cartoons I knew, but others were these crazy weird cartoons in different art styles that had crazy names that I would later spend detective time for years trying to work out what they were, like finding out that something called Johnny Quasimagia actually was Kimaguri Orange Road, the Japanese.
I was going to mention that one, because that took me a while to track down when I was researching this. You sent me that Quasimagia Johnny,
yeah,
and I was looking around going, is this the same thing?
Because
the Japanese theme tune and opening animations are completely different to the Italian version.
Entirely different. And obviously in the Japanese one, he's not called Johnny.
That too, yes.
But and it literally means like Johnny, it's almost magic, or almost magic Johnny, the Italian one, which is quite literal, I suppose. Whereas the Kumagori Orange Road is like the main thrust of it is the love triangle, not the fact that his family have alien magic powers and things. But so sometimes in the translation, this goes beyond the theme tune, but you'd actually like the gist of a series even could be changed. The Italians had a way of making everything really cheerful. Most things were really cheerful. Like, if you ever want a real laugh, I don't know if you know the it's a really old Go Nagai, I think, anime of Devil Man or Devil Boy. Oh, that's terrible of me not remembering which one it is. But it's like a dark adult anime, and the Italian theme tune is hilarious, and it's like just, yeah, really cheesy, suitably cheesy.
I think I know the series you mean. I'll have to seek that out. And I'm going to put links, for the benefit of the listeners, I'm going to put links to as many of these on YouTube as I can, so that
for the benefit of the listener.
Yeah, so dubious benefit, so that people can see them for themselves and experience this. The talking about things being completely different, I mean, that did remind me a little of the whole thing with Ninja Team Gatchaman and Battle of the Planets, and how that pretty much the entire series was re-edited with a different premise, introducing different characters. The villain's name and character was changed.
This has happened a lot. I don't know why. I mean, like Robotech was basically an American, I'm not going to say adaptation because it was close enough to not be a full adaptation, but it was essentially Macross repackaged and remarketed to American audiences. And then, like, obviously people who really got into it looked further and went, there's this entire spectrum of series called this Macross universe that we only knew Robotech. And even Power Rangers, they say all the this is going back a while, I've not watched any modern incarnations, but the ones that were on when we were kids, you know, we would have these American actors doing the stuff out of costume, but the moment it got into costume and into the fight scenes, that was the Japanese footage, which is why the yellow Power Ranger mysteriously lost her breasts as soon as she went into costume, because they were just using the Japanese footage where it was a guy.
It's like Teletubbies, isn't it? It's very, very cheap to do voiceover.
Yeah, I guess so. Which takes us a bit further away from theme tunes. But yeah, you're right, how a little sort of tweak can change the perception of a series.
Well, and we'll get onto that later, because that was the changes was one of the things that I was looking at when I was watching these videos and looking around for the originals. You mentioned this singer, and I assume actress, Christina Davina, who seems to do most of the most of these themes. She seems to sing most of them, and I was wondering, first, how do you even know that? And second, I assume, was she also a voice actor within the shows? Did she have a singing career? You know, was she a pop star?
Do you know what? I have no idea. I mean, in a way, yes, she was a pop star in that theme tunes in Italy, well, from my memory of it anyway, as being younger, it wasn't like over here where we'll, you know, in the pub we'll start singing DuckTales and everyone will go, woo! And we know the tune.
Will they? What pubs do you go to?
Anyone listening, back me up here. If someone went, DuckTales, would you not go, woo? You would. because they're ingrained in our kind of national consciousness. Whether you watch the programs or not, by osmosis, we all know cartoon theme tunes. But in Italy, I think a little bit more like in Japan, the theme tunes, I'm not going to say they charted, but they were more, I guess they were more talked about, like adults. We are adults, obviously, now, but back then, the people I perceived as being adults who didn't watch cartoons, they all knew the themes as well. And I don't know, it somehow, in fact, I'm going to take you away to a story of being at a convention in France. It was Paris Manga, it was a few years ago now, and there was a TV screen, and myself and Sarah McIntyre were very, very cold, but we warmed by this scene that I'm about to describe. And it was basically this TV screen, and what they were doing was just playing cartoon theme tunes. So it was just the opening videos and music, and the crowd that gathered around this screen was amazing. And we're talking, because the convention was in Paris, you had the people who were there, German, French, Swiss, Italian, you know, people had traveled to go there. And a lot of the theme tunes they were playing were the ones I was referring to earlier, where they had the same tunes across different countries. And often Europe, they often all had the same tunes. It's only us that changed them because we're snobbish and, right, you know, anti-cheesy Europop. But people were gathered around this TV and they were singing and they were like, I'd like to think the same would happen over here, but I don't know if it would on such a scale. And the idea that French and Germans were sitting together singing the same song but in a different language. Like, it was a tune that they'd all grown up with. And me and Sarah thought, well, I feel kind of sad because we're the only, like, as British people, we're the only people who can't join in with this because we didn't know these tunes. We recognise some of the cartoons, but our theme tunes were completely different. So I think, I guess there's some power to it by the fact that, like, so many different countries can come together and know the same tune.
You mentioned length, and I noticed that these all seem really long. Most of them come in at 2 minutes or more.
Right.
Which, for an opening theme song, seems excessively long to me, because having grown up in Britain, and also us having imported lots of US cartoons with what I assume are the same, you know, original themes as they had in the US, they were much shorter, you know, much more like TV, sort of live action TV shows, where the theme music, if they have any at all, is rarely more than a minute long.
There's probably a couple of reasons. One, I can tell you for definite. One is sort of slightly guesswork on what I know. But firstly, when I said she's not a pop star per se, the thing is, you would buy Christina Davina albums. To my knowledge, I don't know whether she voice acted or did non-theme tunes, which is terrible. I probably should have looked that up at some point. To me, it didn't matter because she was just the voice of my childhood. She was the voice of Italian cartoons. And she's such a national treasure over there, because you say her name and everyone's like, ah. So when you say, how do I know? You just know, because she sings all the cartoon theme tunes that you grow up with. So she will have concerts and there's albums, but it's all cartoon themes. So although she's not like...
Oh, really?
Yeah, yeah. So it's not that she's a pop star in that she's writing original material, or, you know, in the way we would think. But yeah, people will go to a concert to watch her sing theme tunes. I would. I think that would be amazing. But in terms of the length of them, so there's two reasons. One would be that, yeah, they still make album cuts of them because... You know, whether we hear the full theme tunes or not, you're going to get an album cut. I mean, actually, there's a few like that over here. I'm pretty sure, which was it the other day? We were having one of our regular pub cartoon theme tune singing sessions, and someone moved into the second verse, and it was hilarious because everyone just shut up then, and they were like, there was a second verse? And that's when you're really nerdy. If you could actually sing the second verse of a lot of our cartoon theme tunes, then, you know, you're really ahead there.
By some measure.
By some measure. I'd be well impressed. To me, that kind of stuff's important. Do you know the second verse of Gummy Bears? Come in. So it might be that a lot of ours do as well. We're just not so aware of them. But over there, yeah, so a lot of what you're watching will be the full album length cuts of them. But also, Italian TV, when I was growing up, had a similar thing to in America, where you'd often have a theme tune would play, then you'd have adverts, and then the program would start.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't know how much of it is that they have a longer theme, because that's the time when people go, oh, that's on, brilliant, and then the adverts come in. So it needs long enough to grab people's attention. That's just guesswork, though.
So, yeah, I understand what you're saying. To make an entire segment of it, rather than it be more than an introduction, feel more like an actual... a part of the show, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, that's purely guesswork.
You mentioned about, you know, sort of writing original material. I mean, this is adaptation, but it does strike me that most of these must be getting into original material territory, because...
That's a really good point. They are original material. Of course they are, yeah.
Because what it reminded me of is the Asterix books, which of course are French, but I read them in English, and I knew they were French.
Hang on, are they French or are they Belgian? Or is it just Tintin that's Belgian?
No, Tintin's Belgian. Asterix is French. Now, when I read them as a child, I knew they were French, but I didn't sort of grasp just how much originality there was in what I was reading, which is to say that if you read the French Asterix and compare it to the English, character names are different, jokes are different, subplots and stuff are different. They changed lots and lots of things to adapt it to our culture and write something that sounds as if it's native to the target language, rather than just doing a straight adaptation.
Oh, totally. Localization, so important.
But at the same time, you can't change it too much, because you can't change the original. So in the case of Asterix, you know, you can't add extra balloons onto the page. You can't draw new panels or change where the pages go. And in this case, you can't change the rhythm of the lines, the meter, when they're using the same theme tune, I mean.
Yeah, yeah.
Because I noticed a lot of them, as you say, the Japanese was different to the European. But then if you look at like French or German or Swedish, they're all the same tune with just different lyrics.
I just have to say how happy it makes me, the idea that Anthony Johnston's been sat watching European cartoon theme tunes. I'm really proud of that. I love that.
Well done, well done. Hey, I have nothing against cartoons. It's just that most of the ones that you're referencing here are kind of a generation behind me. Probably the last cartoon that I watched when I was when I was an older kid would have been Thundercats.
Well, yeah.
Anything late, anything, and even that, I kind of felt like I was getting a little bit too old for it, but I did like the theme song.
Oh, of course, yeah, that's the thing. The cartoon theme songs are so powerful. I think we underestimate the power of a cartoon theme tune. We did have some great ones.
We did, well, and Thundercats, you know, heavy metal, or close as you're going to get in a children's cartoon anyway. Yeah. So
that guitar riff kicking in, and everyone just goes, yeah, Thundercats. Or like then you got random stuff like Visionaries, which was pretty out there. Like, dum, 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 dum.
See, Visionaries was a bit later. This is what I was going to say. Anything later than Thundercats, basically, I'm pretty ignorant of. And Visionaries was just like one of my best friends, who is only, I think, 2 years younger than me, was a massive Visionaries fan. Huge. But I just missed it. You know, he was about the age I was when I was watching Thundercats.
Right,
old he was when he was watching Visionaries, and just kind of anything beyond that he's ignorant of. So there is very much like, and I know some of these, the originals are actually older than that, but they didn't reach Europe in
time. Right, yeah. And that's the thing, a lot of what I'm referring to, I mean, the stuff I was watching in Italy, we're talking the last time I was sat for an entire summer watching Union TV or something in Italy, it was a good 15 years ago. So I'm probably saying a lot of stuff that's really out of date as well. And as you say, a lot of the things I was watching then that felt modern then were in Japan like 10 years before that, actually. So yeah. But they're timeless, cheesy music.
Well, I think one of the best examples of that, from what I found clicking around and, yeah, you know, searching around on YouTube looking for originals, was Rose of Versailles, Lady Oscar.
Oh, my God. Yeah.
Which I had heard of before, but I didn't really know what it was about until I started, you know, sort of looking into this.
Oh, it's the best.
That's clearly it's an old manga,
mm-hmm.
and then it's a fairly old anime as well.
It was animated in 1979, the year I was born.
Right, there you go.
79! It's a masterpiece.
And it shows, you know, you can kind of tell, but clearly, you know, some of the European translations were much later than that.
Oh yeah, I mean it's dated, you're right, you can tell it's old. What's fascinating watching the original Rose of Versailles, or Lady Oscar as it's known in Europe, as you say, yeah, that was another of those ones, but for years I was like, I love this thing called Lady Oscar, and
nobody had heard of it.
Took me ages to find out that it's Rose of Versailles, because this is before the internet, damn it. Yeah, it's dated, but what's amazing watching that series now is some of the effects. I mean, I know obviously you'll have only seen the opening theme, but they did like split screen and these clever editing effects. It was probably one of the early series to do the what's now cliche with the throwing sparkles and petals. And they did some really dramatic effects. And then you have to think, this is 1979. Every single one of those effects is hand-drawn. It's just phenomenal what they achieved. It does look dated, it does, but anyone who hasn't come across Lady Oscar / Rose of Versailles, you've probably heard people mention it, and it deserves all the praise it gets. It's epic, absolutely epic. And it's one of those cases that makes me absolutely gutted for British kids, especially British girls, that we didn't grow up with that series. The rest of the world did. In Japan, in Europe, everyone, little girls, grew up with Lady Oscar and Rose of Versailles. America and Britain didn't. And why? Why did we miss out on that incredible series?
Was it never shown over here or in America at all?
No, it never was. Very recently, only a couple of years ago, it finally got licensed in America, like literally a couple of years ago, which is crazy because, I mean, this is a series, there are no words to say how massive it is. Its impact is huge. You can buy Rose of Versailles makeup and post-it notes and anything in the world you can buy that's branded Rose of Versailles. It's just amazing, and people have grown up with it, and it affected me, as you can probably tell, it affected me massively when I was a little girl, because I'd never seen a female character being used that way, and it's just incredible. And yeah, that event in France, seeing thousands of European kids coming together, hugging, laughing, singing Rose of Versailles, and only the English ones going, what is this thing? It's so sad.
I do wonder, in the case of that specific one, how much of it not being released here and in America was down to the gender-bending connotations. Because if you remember, the whole Gatchaman Battle of the Planets thing, one of the elements there was that Zoltan, I have no idea what that character is called in the original Japanese, but in Battle of the Planets, Zoltan was very clearly defined as a guy who just happened to wear lipstick.
Right.
Whereas in the original, I gather, there's a lot more fluidity of like, is this a man? Is this a woman? Maybe it's both.
Yeah, possibly. I mean, with Rose of Versailles, though, I'd like, I mean, that would almost, not a good excuse, but it would be an excuse. Rose of Versailles, though, it's not really, it's not gender bending. She just happens to be, she's born as, she's a woman. She's absolutely a woman who's brought up, she was brought up by her father as a man. She was taught to fight as a man. She leads the army. So it's, there's no physical, she, it, oh, I don't know, this like, could be a deep conversation, but she is a woman. And that's part of the series is, you know, people like poor Andre trying to teach her that she's allowed to be a woman and that she doesn't, being strong and being a fighter, she can do that and be a woman. And trying to dismiss that confusion in her of like, no, I can only do this as a man and being a woman is weak, you know. It, so it's, I totally know what you mean, but yeah, it's quite different to Zoltan, I suppose.
It is different, but I should clarify that when I said gender bending, yes, I didn't mean in the sense of her being transgender or anything
like that. Right, sorry, just general fluidity.
But for the late 70s and early 80s.
Very progressive.
That was right. That was still a very progressive, kind of slightly subversive way of presenting something that was for children.
Yeah.
This is the other thing we always have to remember is that certainly, I'm not so sure about mainland Europe, but certainly here and in America, cartoons are very much, everybody sees them as these are for children.
Yeah, that's another interesting difference. And perhaps another of the reasons why someone like Cristina Divina is such a massive success is that in Italy, and the feeling I got growing up is that they weren't for children. And in fact, the person who got me into Lady Oscar, or Rose of Versailles, I'm going to call it Lady Oscar from now because that's what I grew up knowing it as. But it was actually my aunt, Ivana. She was the one. She was like, oh, this is a beautiful series. Oh, this is great. You've got to watch this. I mean, my cousins were there watching it with me, but it was my aunt who recorded it onto VHS, posted it over to me. You know, it had, I don't know, with Rose of Versailles, it doesn't, it's, no part of it feels like a child series, not made for children. And I think perhaps therein lies one of the problems is that you're right, America and England for a long time couldn't quite get their heads around this idea that actually you can market cartoons for adults or like they're, but they don't have to just be full of sex and violence to be for adults. They could just be a really great story. And maybe that was where, I mean, there's a, some people listening will hopefully know this already and be nodding along emphatically, but there's a series called Cardcaptor Sakura, which was brought over here as a, as Card Captors. That one is for children. It's a Clamp series. It's beautiful. It's a magical girls series. It's got real heart to it. And again, it's one of those stories that has a lot, what the Japanese have in the past been very good at doing. It had a lot of questions that were asked and answered. So for instance, there's a, the main character on point, she's got a massive crush on her older brother's best friend, who's obviously a lot older than she is. And at one point he finally speaks to her and it's this beautiful scene. I mean, she's only meant to be like 8 or something. And this boy's about, I don't know, he's must be 16, 17 or something. And he sits and explains to her and he says, think about the way you love me. And she's like, yeah. And he's like, does it feel similar to the way you love your dad? And she's like, oh, maybe it does. And he sort of, they really kind of question these things in a beautiful way and talk about feelings. But there's also a boy character, sort of her equivalent, that also has a crush on this male character. Nothing ever happens with it, but it's just one of those things that he blushes sometimes and he stutters around him. And we don't know if it's the same as the way Sakura feels or what. But there's an episode where he makes a teddy bear. It's a Valentine's episode. And he makes a teddy bear for this older boy. And there's this adorably ridiculous scene where they're sitting on these steps and Lee, who's very kind of just embarrassed and angry, just thrusts this teddy bear at him and runs away, and it's very kind of sweet. But in the Card Captors version, so the American dubbed version, and this goes back to what we were saying about how you can tweak things, they change the script entirely so that it's Lee sitting there talking about the fact that he's made this teddy bear for Sakura, and will she like it? Will she like the teddy bear I've made for her? Here, you take it, give it to Sakura. And I can remember watching that and just being like, what have they done? They've taken a series that was so good for making kids watch that and go, how I feel isn't necessarily weird. This, you know, this is a good way to be. There's nothing to be ashamed of. And they turned it into something different. And oh, this is nothing to do with theme tunes. That's just a point.
No, but it's still interesting. And it reminds me a little of the whole mature readers thing that we have in comics, which, as you know, this in the mainstream, it's very often perceived that if something is mature readers, that basically just means sex and violence,
yeah,
rather than mature themes or a mature handling of certain
right.
things. But that's something, of course, that we know the Japanese manga and anime industries have been comfortable with for decades. And so has most of Europe. You know, look at the bande dessinée scene.
Yeah, yeah, there is a difference. I mean, all right, yes, absolutely. Japan produces a lot of very bizarre stuff as well. And, I'm not going to defend all of it. But when they get it right, they really get it right. And for a country that we used to sort of see it as being quite rigid and they're quite, they're more concerned about issues than we are. Actually, not some issue. Like, I think we're a lot more uptight. We're like, oh no, we can't let our children watch a gay character. Of course you can. Why should we?
Right. Or a woman being raised as a man.
Yeah.
Without a... Because there have been kids shows where there's a character like that, but they're shows headed by a man, you know, where the main character is male and then his sidekick might be a woman who's been, you know, raised a bit of a tomboy.
Or you've even got, like, there's recent shows, and again, this is a Japanese one, so just to show it comes from everywhere, but there's that, Haruhi, the host club, which was funny and ridiculous, and there's a lot of these series now where you have, like, a girl who's mistaken for a boy or who is raised as a boy, but it's completely different because, yes, that's surrounded by boys, and it's more about, oh, doesn't she make a cute boy? It's a completely different approach to Oscar, who is genuine. This is what you watch in that series. You watch them grow over the space of, I guess 15, 20 years or something. And it's the friendship between her and Antoinette and how Marie Antoinette obviously is coming from she's a powerful woman who will be expected to put on dresses and have the face to go with it. And Oscar's a very powerful woman, but in a very different way. She's powerful with a sword in her hand and she wears a uniform and I'm sorry, I'm just going to rave about the series. That's not what we're talking about, but it's just a spectacular series that anyone can watch, adults and children. And I don't remember it being packaged in Italy in a way that said, all right, parents, time to get a book out. Your kids can watch this now. It was like everyone watches it and it had a special place in everyone's heart.
Well, one of the ways it was packaged, obviously, was behind this theme song. And
I have to check, which theme song were you listening to? I'm going to just quickly...
I probably spent longer looking at different versions of Lady Oscar than any other, just because there seem to be so many. The Italian version you sent me is the one that that starts with a marching drum beat.
Yeah.
And sings Lady Oscar, Lady Oscar.
I used to sing that all the time as a kid.
Guarda il lampo che laggiù, attraversa il cielo blu. Lady Oscar, Lady Oscar, è una luce abbagliante, dura solo un istante, poi c'è il rombo del tuono, che tremendo frastuono, ma in un attimo il silenzio c'è. Lady Oscar, tutto questo è proprio come una battaglia, e tu lo sai, Lady Oscar.
The German version appears to be exactly the same music, but edited to be shorter and with German lyrics.
Right.
But even the melody is the same, just all in German. And there's another case of adaptation. So hang on, you've got to get the same information over, but in 45 seconds less.
Quite difficult, yeah.
And in a different language. And then the Japanese, the original Japanese, kind of, perhaps ironically, I'm not even sure what you'd call this, but given that you just said it was originally made in 1979, sounds like a disco track. And then for some reason, that was not used over here. And I don't really understand, given that, as you say, a lot of these are very Eurobeat, Eurodisco sounding theme tunes. I wonder why they didn't use that and instead used a much more almost military sounding tune.
Yes, I know what you mean. It's an incredibly 70s tune. I mean, part of it might have been, I suppose, that it was much later that it came to Europe. I actually prefer, I think maybe it's what they were trying to infer the series is about. I mean, the Japanese one, ignoring the disco and the fact that, yes, it, you know, obviously it is cheesy, it is very 70s, but it feels more like it's a love story, and almost the way they, even their opening theme is sort of, in my memory, it seems a little bit more tied up with the sort of self-identity and the feelings, whereas the Italian, the military style one, which is the tune I always grew up with, and I love that, that feels much more like, she's a soldier, kind of. So...
And that's exactly the impression I got from it. The Japanese version definitely sounded softer, almost.
Yes, it did. And that is really interesting, actually, because I suppose the military one, there's that break in the middle of it where it suddenly becomes softer and the lyrics change a bit more. And it is, I mean, the whole song in the Italian one, even though it's got a military beat to it, it is basically, it's talking a bit, it's very much about like, oh, how bright your sword is and how powerful you are and the, how you dress. But then it will kind of break into... There's like a bit in the middle that talks more about feelings. And so it's almost like the song itself is like, this is the military aspect, but there's also a woman in there who's dealing with life. And then it's military. Whereas maybe in the Japanese one, they didn't, because it was such a known commodity anyway, because the manga was so huge, perhaps they didn't feel the need to impress the, by the way, she's a soldier bit. I don't know.
That's a good point. If it was, because it was a very successful manga, wasn't it? So if they can assume a certain level of knowledge on the part of the audience, then maybe they didn't need to do that. I did notice that also the imagery and was completely different in the opening. In the Japanese version, it is all very symbolic, almost no character shots at all. And it's just lots of textures and it's all really symbolic. And the very first image is her wrapped up in thorns, you know, rose thorns. Yeah, ha ha.
Such an iconic, such a...
But that image, as far as I can tell, isn't in the European one at all. The European one all seems to be clips from the show showing the character doing things like sword fighting and...
Again, it's pure guesswork here. But, I mean, I've got one of those still frames from the Japanese opening. I actually have a print of it sitting on my TV. There's such this lovely artwork. And it's all sort of her original artwork. And I wonder if maybe the opening theme for the Japanese one was made before they'd finished animating. It could be, because by the time it came over to Europe, they had a full, whatever it is, 40 episodes to cut from. And the Italian theme tune, part of what I love about that opening is it literally shows her going from when she's, you've got the shots of her when she's very young and she's got shorter hair and she's in the white. And then you've got shots of her much, much older with long hair in the blue when the world has gone to poo and the revolution's kicked in. And because it does fan so much, it's a series that goes from being at the beginning like, oh, how cute, look, here's a girl being a soldier and here's like a, and here's Marie Antoinette, she's just come over from Austria, isn't she cute? And it's quite funny. The first arc is quite sort of, it's just court intrigue, you know, and by the last arc you've got characters being beheaded and the, oh, it's just so powerful. So with the, by the time the Europeans had it, you know, they had the entire series to cut bits from, whereas maybe the Japanese just had to use still frames because they hadn't finished making the animation at that point.
Well, they weren't still frames so much. It's just, it's all very, very sort of symbolic and, you know, metaphorical rather than straight, here's a, you know, a scene of her pulling a sword and here's a scene of her dancing at court and that sort of thing. And I wonder if that's maybe just a cultural, or kids can't handle that, too symbolic.
Maybe. Yeah,
kids can't handle, show them the character with a sword in her hand.
They can handle characters jumping off of buildings and killing themselves in the series, but yeah. Still scars me. This is turning into just me defending Rose of Versailles, which needs no defending. I know there's a
well, just to go through a few of the other examples that you sent me, Pokemon was interesting because
gotta catch them all.
Pokemon appears to be like, okay, so you sent me the Italian one, which is completely different to the original Japanese, and both of them are completely different to the American and English versions.
Yeah.
Well, English, we just got the American version. But all three are completely different. And I mean different tunes, different lyrics. Like, the only thing, ironically, what we were just talking about, the only thing they share in common is a lot of the animation is shared between them. But in terms of the music and the lyrics, the melody, everything, and the length of them, they're all completely different.
The Italian Pokemon thing. I think that was, even though that one's not Christina De Vera, obviously, that's a lot newer. But that was the first Italian theme tune I showed to my poor husband when he used to work from home. And I would sometimes sit and have like just Italian theme tunes playing while I worked.
And you're still married?
I know. And that was the first one. But he'll still sing it with me now. He knows it now. Once it gets you, you know, you can't. Just gotta catch them all. And it's so Eurobeat. I love it.
It really is. Pokemon, the Pokemon theme also brings up something else that I noticed, which was the bits of random English in these, which I found quite amusing. Like Lady Oscar is apparently called that in every language around the world.
Yes. Yeah. Isn't that an interesting title to give it? I suppose it is quite...
Well, there's the fact that obviously nobody changes the character's name, which is just interesting in itself, but the fact that they call her in every language Lady Oscar, they don't translate that to the native language at all.
No, in fact, the reason I was saying which theme tune, there was a second Italian theme tune, which I don't know if you came across it or not. It's the one that we all forget, try and pretend didn't happen, and it basically went, oh, lady, 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 Oscar. Do, 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 do. I think there are even lyrics in it that say, life is a party.
Wow, no, I didn't see that one.
I'm glad you didn't find that one. It does nothing to imply in the series. It's just like, oh, let's all have a party. What? I don't know where that one came from. It sounds like it was probably Austrian or German at some point.
But I mean, correct me if I'm wrong, but in Italian, you know, if the wife of a lord is not known as a lady, I mean, a lord, what's even lord in Italian? What would be the equivalent of a count? It's comte, isn't it?
Comte, yeah, contessa. But she's not. She's none of those things. And they couldn't have called her like signora. It would have just been really weird. I don't know, lady. Everyone knows what that means. So,
but do they? That's what I'm wondering. Does that actually translate across outside of the context of this?
Oh, do you know what? I've just realised what you're saying. You're seeing that as a title. Do you know what? I never ever considered that. As lord and lady, like lady, I just never thought of that. She's a lady and she's called Oscar. That's like, and I suspect that's probably what the European mindset on that is. I just never even considered that as a rank or title because she's not a lady. Like she's not a, by rank, she's not a lady.
Oh, okay.
She's a general. Well, by the end, she's a she's a military. She's in military capacity.
Oh, okay. Well, that's my misunderstanding then. I thought that was her, you know, sort of nobility rank.
No, that in itself is actually really interesting because it makes sense that you'd think that. And I'm now trying to think whether she ever is referred to by that title.
Well, and especially as, again, okay, so it just means sort of woman Oscar. Fine. But
yeah,
it,
literally, Lady Oscar. And I-
but again, the word lady isn't, you don't say lady in Italian, do you?
No.
Or
no.
In French or in German or in Swedish or any of the others that I found.
But lady, I don't know, I guess everyone probably knows what that means. I, you know, I've never considered that. It's really interesting because to me it's just Lady Oscar. It always seemed a bit of a weird title, Lady Oscar.
Maybe it would be the equivalent of, you know, having an English cartoon imported from Europe called Mademoiselle Oscar or something.
Maybe they would just leave it. I guess La Rosa della Versailles, which would just be like Rose of Versailles. Because I don't know why they didn't just go with Rose of Versailles, because it's such a beautiful title. But again, Rose of Versailles is a title you use to get adults to watch your series.
Well, and especially as Oscar, I think pretty much everywhere in the world, is a man's name. It's not used as a female name anywhere, is it? So there is that juxtaposition.
Yeah, it's telling of how, what an impact that series had on me, that you say it's a man's name. I'm like, shut up, it's not. And then I'm like, I guess it is. To me, if someone says Oscar to me, my first thought is her.
Wow. The last one I want to touch on was, well, actually, no, two. First of all, Alvin Rock and Roll.
Alvin Rock and Roll. Alvin Superstar.
Which apparently is the Italian version of Alvin and the Chipmunks.
It is.
There is no, as far as I can tell, English language series called Alvin Rock and Roll.
No.
And I know this because, did you know, there's an Alvin and the Chipmunks wiki?
Of course there is.
Called Monkopedia.
Monkopedia.
And again, I will link to that in the show notes for listeners. Yeah, they're completely different. The Italian and the American titles there, absolutely different in every possible respect, even to the point where is this Christina Davina again?
Yes. Absolutely.
Right. It's just her voice.
Mm-hmm.
Like the original, the American version has the high squeaky chipmunk voices, but the Italian one doesn't. It just has her singing.
Yeah, no, it's just her, and it's such a funky song. It's my ring tune. It's my ringtone on my phone. You've probably heard it before.
If I had, I didn't recognize it.
Next time it goes off, you'll be like, "Is that Alvin Rock and Roll?" That is my ringtone. Yes, no, that's her. And actually, you saying that does make me think again, this isn't just sort of random observation, actually, where we're talking about it. But the Alvin, it was sort of reduced from being Alvin and the Chip. I mean, obviously, it's still the same cartoon, but it was very much about Alvin. And a lot of the cartoons I remember growing up with, one of the key things, actually, is they would always take a, it would always become about a character. So hence, you get Kumagori Orange Road becomes Johnny Quasimagia. The Rose of Versailles becomes just Lady Oscar. The Chipmunk becomes just Alvin. You have Fist of the North Star was over there, and it was just Ken because it was about him.
Oh, really?
So, yeah, a lot of the themes, I suppose, now I'm thinking about it, did sort of become much more about this is the lead character, this is this person. I'm thinking of any others. Kodacha Child's Toy was over there as... In fact, it wasn't. She wasn't even called Sana over there. She was given another name.
Well, let's finish off talking about one that has a very clear lead character, Sailor Moon. Which is the last one, I think, that you example that you sent to me. And again, the Italian and Japanese versions are completely different. But it's interesting if you listen to them both. They, although they are different, they have different melody, different backing track, everything. But they'd feel closer thematically than most of the others. I'm not really sure why that is.
I guess Sailor Moon has pretty strong, it's quite hard to read that in a different way.
Well, sure, but, you know, they don't appear to have taken that into consideration with any of the other theme tunes that they readapted. And yet with this one, as I say, it is completely different, but it just kind of feels like I had to go back and forth a few times and think, is that the same but with different lyrics? And no, clearly it's not, but if you're hearing it for the first time, you might not realise that they are completely different.
Yeah, I see what you mean. I always found the Italian one, actually, I sort of prefer the Italian one because I found it just had that edge of sinister about it. Do you feel? I feel like it's just a slightly, I'm not going to say dark, but it was just a bit, I don't know, it just always felt a little bit more like there's more to this than just a magical girl.
Interesting. No, I can't say I really noticed that. But then, you know, don't forget, I don't speak Italian, so...
Oh, the words aren't, yeah, I'm not, I mean just in the sound of it, when I think of the sound of it, I mean the words, literally... Sailor Moon, Amica Sailor Moon is just Sailor Moon, friend Sailor Moon. So it's, I think the lyrics, I can't remember all the lyrics, but it's...
The cultural differences, I think, are what make this most interesting because, again, Sailor Moon, I found the German version and that is, once again, completely different. That is different to both the Italian and the Japanese.
I've heard the German one.
And the German version is real, ooh, Eurotechnoist fantastischia. It's real Eurobeat, you know, party in Berlin kind of stuff.
Brilliant. The Germans have a lot of umpa theme tunes, which I think is great.
Oh no, the Sailor Moon is definitely not an umpa theme tune. No, that is like, that is 2 a.m. in the underground Berlin disco, you know?
Oh wow. Oh, I need to look up that one then.
But it did make me think that all of these theme songs must be dirt cheap to produce if everybody that they license it to is not only re-recording all the voices, obviously redubbing, because cartoons were always dubbed rather than subtitled, but then they're also writing and recording entirely original theme songs as well for so many of these.
It is interesting, isn't it? What, I don't know what makes them go, actually, we'll make our own for this. With the Italians, I think it probably got to a point where I think Christina Davina's voice was so iconic and so recognisable that actually they could, it was better for the Italian tunes if they had one of her songs. Because
that made it more marketable, you think?
Yeah, exactly. Because she was just such a known commodity, I suppose.
Interesting.
And I wonder if there's any, I mean, we don't know without knowing how the industry works, but perhaps for certain themes especially, I mean, in Japan, there have been like anime theme tunes are a massive deal over there. And again, there's albums and there's concerts and they often have a lot of big bands will do the theme tune, so they're very well-known bands. So maybe the amount it would cost to have that theme tune for something that over here no one would understand anyway. It's like maybe it's actually cheaper rather than getting the rights to that.
Oh, you think the theme tune, because of that, may not be included in the license for the cartoon?
I wouldn't be surprised. Again, I can't claim to know. It's just guessing.
I hadn't considered that, but that is very possible, isn't it?
Yeah, it is possible. I mean, when they've got a big band doing it, or if, you know, it's quite a sort of... because they can definitely monetize the theme tunes, because you'll have like over there in all the karaoke spots in Tokyo, you know, you can sing anime theme tunes at the karaoke. So I guess.
Oh, can you? I didn't know that.
I know. I wish we had that here. Oh my God. I wish. No, I went over there years ago to visit Laura Watson when she was living over there, and she does an amazing, like her Sailor Moon is fantastic.
Wow.
What's the other one? Oh, Cutie Honey. Cutie Honey is the other one.
I've never even heard of that.
Yeah, it's very, very old school. But yeah, wouldn't that be great over here? Listen up, if there's any karaoke booth owners, come on, we want cartoon theme tune karaoke booth.
Oh God, I've got nightmares of people trying to sing the Muskerhounds theme tune.
Oh please, it'd be amazing.
Some bar in Surrey somewhere.
We sang, and again, this is cartoon theme tunes do have a real impact. And I know this is meant to be just about Italians, but all of them do. We ended up singing the Dogtanian theme tune, sorry, the Muskerhounds theme tune to Cam Clark, who was the voice of Dogtanian at an expo event years and years ago. And we were talking to him in the bar about like all the voices he's done. And we'd all mentioned Dogtanian and the Muskerhounds. And he was like, oh, was that over here? And we were like, was it over here? It was massive over here. And he was like, no one cared about it in America. It just bombed.
It was very popular over here. I watched that when I was a kid, certainly. Yeah,
yeah, so we all started singing the theme tune to him and made him hide behind the settee. But all of us, like everyone, knew every word of that theme tune. There was no, it would start and you'd be like, oh, I don't know if I remember it. Oh, yes, I do. I know the whole song.
I know the opening lines. I don't know the whole song now.
I bet I
don't think it would come to mind. But yeah, the you know, one for all for one, Muskerhounds.
Helping everybody.
And on that note, I think that's as good a place as any to bring this to a close.
Oh, wow. I feel like I've not so much defended Italian cartoon themes as just basically ranted about Lady Oscar most of the time. But I hope people feel inspired to check out some of these tunes.
Yeah, I think anyone with an interest in that sort of the cultural differences in things like anime especially should definitely go and look at these. Yeah, should go to the show notes at ump.fm and check out all the links that I'm going to put up there, because this was a real eye-opener to me. I had no idea about so much of this stuff, and it has been really interesting. So thank you for coming on and, you know, educating me.
Oh, you're welcome. I'm sure it's made your life richer.
All right. So, Emma, where can people find you if they like what you have to say? Where are you on Twitter?
I am just at Emma Vicelli on Twitter. So I'll spell it out just in case, but it's V-I-E-C-E-L-I is how you spell my name. It's been spelled all sorts of interesting ways, including by best friends and publishers, but that's the correct spelling of my name. Google, obviously, because I've got a weird enough name, you can just Google, but I'm on emmavicelli.com. Yes, Twitter at emmavicelli. I'm on Tumblr under the guise of Inky Tasty. But the thing I'd probably like people to look at most these days is, of course, breakscomic.com, which is my webcomic that I'm running with Malin Ryden. And you can find links from there to our blogs and things anyway. Likewise, it's linked from my website. But yeah, that's if you're going to check out any. And imagine it with an Italian cartoon theme tune. No, don't. No. Actually.
You've been listening to Unjustly Maligned, Episode 6, with Anthony Johnston and Emma Vicelli. Unjustly Maligned is a 7RQ production for The Incomparable and is made in England. Thanks for listening, and we'll see you next time. That's where I'll stick the theme tune, I think.
No.
Our own theme tune.
Oh, right, our theme tune.
Which does not have lyrics or me singing.
And doesn't go, breaks, 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 it's all happy. Except it wouldn't be called Breaks, it would be called, like, Cortland or something. It would have to be named after just the character. Oh, God. That's it. Yeah, when I was saying about the making everything happy, actually, you know, I mentioned the Devil Man thing. It wasn't that when I was thinking of the one that made me laugh in terms of cheering it up was Duckula, which obviously our one was that fantastic. I mean, it was always very cartoony anyway, but it was all like, it was like cheesy pop, but it had all that, all the sinister sounds. And you had the sort of, oh, I don't get it, and the voiceovers over it. Whereas in Italy, it became Cristina Davina again, and it was like, Conte Duckula. So it was like, this suddenly became a pop song. It's like, this is about a vampire duck. And it was really cheerful. Next time you guys are DJing at a convention in the UK, I'm just saying that the Italian Pokemon theme tune would be a dance floor filler.
I'm not so sure about that, but who knows? Maybe I'll give it a try.